You're listening to a podcast from Washington Post Live, bringing the Post's newsroom to life on stage.
Technological change, new ideas about teaching and learning, and evolving workforce needs are driving transformative change in the education sector from grade school to grad school. On Thursday, January 17th, The Washington Post hosted a gathering of leading educators and innovators. In this segment, experts discuss how colleges are adapting to invest in skills-based training for a generation looking to avoid massive debt and develop the tools that translate directly into jobs. Speakers talk about how a growing number of alternatives to traditional colleges are filling in educational gaps through programs geared toward trade-based learning, high skills workforce training, and job placement. Let's listen.
Well, hello. I'm Josh White. I'm the America Desk editor here at The Washington Post, and I'm a former education editor here as well. I'm delighted to have on stage with me today Ryan Craig, co-founder of University Ventures, an investment firm that focuses on global higher education and creating new pathways from education to employment. Also, Dr. Bob McMahon, president of Kettering University in Flint, Michigan. An experiential learning-based school with a focus on STEM and business fields. And Dr. Sanjay Rai, Senior Vice President for Academic Affairs at Montgomery College, a top community college right here in Maryland that serves about 60,000 students each year. Well, it's a new record. Just about one-third of adults in the United States have a traditional four-year college degree, which means there are a lot of people who don't. And many of those graduates are not prepared to go directly into a specific job. Many of them are underemployed, and many of them are saddled with a lot of debt. Our discussion today is going to focus on how we're preparing the next generation of students for the jobs of tomorrow. Before we begin, I want to remind the audience that you can tweet your questions using the hashtag PostLive. I want to start with Mr. Craig. There's a problem. There's also a lot of possibilities. What do you see as the biggest problem here, and what are the chances of success?
Well, what gets most of the attention around higher education is the crisis of affordability. You can't miss it. Every week on the front page somewhere, the student loan debt, now $1.5 trillion, about $40,000 per college graduate. So it's a lot. But the fact of the matter is that if every graduate were entering into a $60,000 a year starting salary job, we wouldn't have a problem. So it's the combination of affordability and employability. And over the last decade, we've seen a real crisis in employability. Underemployment amongst college graduates is now north of 40%. And a big reason for that is the digitization of the economy, and both in substance as well as in terms of form, because it's changed hiring. And college graduates just simply aren't being prepared for the entry-level jobs that employers are looking to fill. So it's a major problem.
But there are pathways to success. Dr. McMahon, you've looked at your university has for a very long time focused on this issue of employability. Can you talk a bit about what your university does, how it does it, and why it has been successful?
Be delighted. It's actually a very interesting story in American higher education. We're celebrating our centennial this year. So we were founded 100 years ago. And the centennial motto that we have, I think, is really very appropriate. It's the future of education built a century ago. Because in a lot of ways, we actually represent in practice what a lot of institutions and a lot of higher ed, a lot of conversation higher ed is about, is outlines as aspirational goals for how you integrate theory and practice in education. At our institution, students, we have no summer holidays. We go 12 months a year. The curriculum is 4.5 years long. The students, when they join, they're split into two cohorts that go into a 12-week on, 12-week off rotation from their freshman year. And they spend 12 weeks in an intense academic curriculum, and then 12 weeks in a professional placement in industry or in government or in laboratories that that complements their professional and their professional goals and why they are the degree that they're seeking. So these are not, these professional placements are cooperative placements, but they're not observational. They become employees of the organization. They have the same expectations and demands placed upon them as any other employee. They have the benefits that a typical employee does, et cetera. So over the course of their 4.5 years, they advance in their corporate roles as they advance in their academic abilities. And this creates a virtuous circle that is really unprecedented in American higher education because it creates the whole individual. I like to say our employability of our students, the placement rate of our students, vacillates wildly between 99 and 100% every year. And I'd underscore the point you just made. We have one of the lowest debt default rates of any institution in the United States because when our students leave, they are, it's that combination of cost and the ability to address the debt that is at the centerpiece of a lot of the affordability
issues. I'll just add that I think that is fairly unique. The vast majority of colleges and universities, their interface to the job market, to the world of employers, the big bad world of employers, is career services. And that's one office out of dozens that is often located on the periphery of campus, mm-hmm. typically not open on the evenings or weekends when students have the most time. Only about 50% of students in bachelor's degree programs even partake of career services. And when they do walk in, they're likely to meet someone who's worked their whole career in career services as opposed to in the industry they're trying to get into. So that would be great if we were all trying to get jobs in career services, but it doesn't work like that. So colleges and universities don't see as their responsibility to get their students jobs. They continue to spout the old, in my view, tired line that we prepare you for your fifth job, not your first job. Students today know that if they don't get a good first job, they're probably not going to get a good fifth job in today's economy.
And Dr. Raya, at Montgomery College, that is one of the things that you're trying to address, the skills gap and that first job. Can you talk a little bit about what a community college can do to serve a very large community that is seeking work, success in life, and what programs are most successful and how do you do it?
So thank you for the opportunity. But before I answer your question, when I go to these types of discussion, often, you know, we are quick to conclude that there are lots of problems with our higher education system. I want to say this very clearly that U.S. higher education system is still one of the best in the world. And a lot of countries are able to replicate a lot of things that we do very successfully. But in one area, they have not succeeded. That is our higher education system. So we still start from a very good place. We still have a very strong system. But we do have a couple of challenges. And we have to understand the root cause of these challenges. And I think globalization, technology, and changing demography of our nation is something that is asking us to do things differently. And I speak from Montgomery College, a community college right outside Washington, D.C., from their perspective. So the idea, these three things that I mentioned, that kind of fields into three different areas. Accessibility, higher education has to be more accessible, more affordable. Cost of higher education is certainly an issue. And the employability is there too. So a one-year degree at Montgomery College will cost about $6,000. So affordability is important. We are in Montgomery County. We have three campuses, several workforce development sites. We are accessible. Then we are accessible through technology. We have a strong online program. Then we are academically accessible too. If someone is not college ready, you need some. So you have some gaps in some math, English, those types of things. We do that very well. And other 1,300 or so community colleges across the nation do that very well. So challenges that higher education system faces today, our community colleges are doing that quite well. Now, coming back to this skill gap issue, what we do at Montgomery College, our economy is high-tech economy, biotechnology economy. So we work very closely with the industries. And we create programs on the credit side and also on the non-credit side. So if you are an underemployed or unemployed IT worker, you can come to Montgomery College and you can enter into our cybersecurity program that's offered, you know, Tuesday, Thursday evening at a very, very affordable class, $500-$600 or so. And there are thousands of cybersecurity jobs that are open in this DC, Virginia, Maryland area. So we provide our companies talented workforce. At the same time, people who are underemployed, unemployed, they get opportunities to do that. Biotechnology is the same area. In our credit program, about half of our students have undergraduate and master's degrees, often in life sciences, but they don't have the skills to be employed in the biotechnology industries that we have in the life sciences corridor in this area. So we create programs again in the same way, working very closely with the industries in those areas. So there are several. Then data analysis. Big data is another huge opportunities, especially in the intersection of IT and data science. A lot of new tools are being developed. So that's where lots of opportunities are there. And there's no other country that's ahead of us in these types of things. I think that we have a premier higher education system. And the community college system is uniquely American. And we need to start look at our strength and develop those systems further.
Now, Dr. McMahon, one of the things that your university is working on is experiential learning. You have an autonomous vehicle program, crash test facility, labs, that sort of. Can you talk a little bit about those programs? Why specifically focus on an individual technology or something like the autonomous vehicles? What do the students get out of that?
They get the world out of it. And the reason that I say that is that the university is actually founded on a different idea, and that is that in order to educate the whole person, that you have to create an equivalence. If you look at how we typically treat experiential learning in the United States, it is always integrated into our educational system in a way that is subordinate to the classroom experience. That says we have this university or this program, and we're going to add an experiential component to it. We're actually not going to change the way that we deliver what we deliver in the classroom. Okay. We're just going to tack this thing on and call it a whole. The Kettering model is the opposite. It says that these two things are equal in importance. One is not subordinate to the other. Each informs the other. And so the students spend as much time in the application of the discipline as in the acquisition of the knowledge and support of the discipline. And that creates a virtuous circle that is bidirectional. The students' experience in their cooperative placements or in these other experiential activities informs the classroom. How many universities are out there where a faculty member is teaching abstract concept, Navier-Stokes equation, and is talking about the theory, then turns around and faces the students and says, Sue, now you're working in a wind tunnel lab, in a national lab, you're working in the wind tunnel facility. Do you use this in this way, or do you have some way which you've adapted this formalism to that particular application? And Sue stands up and says, well, no, we don't really use that. Would you come up here and show us how that works? And then the second, I mean, that closure of application and knowledge is explosive.
And that's so hard to do. I mean, so much harder than, you know, giving the same lecture you've given for the last 20 years in the class, which is why, you know, these institutions on the stage here are so exceptional. The reality is that, you know, this is a many-to-many problem, right? Mm-hmm. You've got millions of employers, you've got thousands of post-secondary institutions. How do you match students and graduates with jobs? Right, no single institution, with maybe a couple of exceptions here, is capable of managing the relationships with employers, the number of relationships at the level of depth they need to be managed. And no employer is really interested in doing that. And over the last decade, we've seen the emergence of what we call hiring friction, which is the increased propensity of employers to say, I'm not hiring anyone for this position unless they've demonstrated they can do it, they've already done it effectively. Even for entry-level jobs, we see all kinds of experience requirements now on jobs that should be entry-level. For example, entry-level sales mm-hmm. positions, which say, we want 3 years of experience with Salesforce.com. Well, that's crazy.
How do you get experience?
Exactly.
Without experience?
How do you get experience with this friend? So we're seeing the emergence of these intermediaries that sort of stand between traditional post-secondary education and employers. We call them last mile training intermediaries, bridging that last mile to the employer, typically by training on the digital skills that traditional post-secondary institutions just really aren't very good at training on, because they simply don't have the relationships with employers to understand what technologies employers are actually looking for in these jobs.
And so if employers are looking for marketable skills and they're looking for experience, what does that mean for the philosophy major? What does that mean for someone who's studying classical literature or English?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I just published, wrote a book that came out last year called Faster and Cheaper Alternatives to College, where I make the argument that there are these new faster and cheaper alternatives, boot camps and apprenticeship models and staffing models that incorporate last mile training that are going to be providing new faster and cheaper pathways to the good first jobs that college graduates are having a hard time getting, probably not at your institutions, but at lots of institutions.
For us, our Department of Liberal Arts is our largest academic department. So even in a STEM-focused curriculum, one of our big new announcements recently is we opened a comprehensive set of music studios for our students to go in and they can go in and record. We have bands forming because there's so much energy around the intersection of the arts and engineering and the sciences.
If you can get your students jobs, you can do all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And you have room to do all that. The challenge is that we're seeing too few institutions doing a good job of that. And we believe that in the next 5 to 10 years, millions of students will vote with their feet in favor of faster and cheaper alternatives. And we are not saying that we should have or would benefit from less post-secondary education in aggregate or per capita. That would be economic suicide. But what we are saying is that we should think about a restaging of how we consume that post-secondary education, as we've done everything else in our society. You shouldn't have to do it all you can eat in one sitting. You should be able to get what you need when you need it. And if that means taking a faster and cheaper pathway to a good first job, and then being in that job for a couple of years with no debt, and then looking around and ascertaining what secondary or tertiary pathway you might want in order to move on, move up, develop those cognitive executive function skills you need to be successful in your career, then you should do that. And those pathways will be available. Ultimately, we do need to develop all of those cognitive and humanities skills.
And the community colleges are very, very, they're a critical part of that spectrum. We really need to look at this as a spectrum and a kind of a lifelong engagement in this.
Now, you've talked about the concept of placement colleges.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that.
You know, I think that a lot of, and I say this lovingly because my mother actually taught in a community college for 30 years, and so I know community colleges well, and I know that many of them are run as academic institutions where the priority remains degree programs and associate degree programs over sort of employer and industry-focused certificate programs. Associate degree programs, for the most part, are stepping stones, transfer colleges to four-year institutions, and some community colleges do that better than others. What we would like to see is a distinct community college system that's really focused on employment and employability rather than an academic model, and that would involve some sort of hybrid of what community colleges do today with their certificate programs and industry focuses, as Montgomery is doing, and what workforce boards are doing.
Dr. Rai, what do you think about
that? I think that's important, but we don't want to do either or. students have to learn how to think critically, and since you brought up philosophy, I'm a student of mathematics and physics. If you look at fundamental questions in philosophy or physics or math, they are not that far away. At Montgomery College and at other community colleges as well, now there are a lot of students who go from credit program to non-credit program. You're doing a degree in cybersecurity on the credit side, There are lots of opportunity to take non-credit courses and certifications in networking and other areas. That's happening. Students from non-credit side are going to the credit side. At Montgomery College, a large number of students do that. Why that's important? Because we heard the expression last mile. In knowledge economy, that last mile becomes longer. It's not only a mile. And the model where students go from credit and non-credit, it shortens that last mile thing. So work, and that can happen only if you understand your economy, you work with your community. So at Montgomery College, for example, health sciences program, a lot of need, as you know, we are all aging populations, and we are going to use a lot of healthcare workers because of aging. And a lot of our healthcare workers are from baby boomer generation, so we have to replace them also. So at Montgomery College, we became the first community college in the country to have a hospital right on our That's campus. Right. That creates a wonderful collaboration between our health sciences program and the hospital. So I think those are the models that Montgomery College and a lot of other community colleges are doing, and doing it very, very successfully. Right. So most of the questions that we read in the literature about issues with higher education is skill gap. In US higher education system, community colleges are already doing those things quite well. The question is, how do we scale that up? And how do we make the entire spectrum of our higher education equally proactive, equally responsive?
Now, if I'm a prospective student, and I'm looking for all of these things, I'm looking for marketability, I'm looking for a job, I'm looking for success and a future.
Enroll at Montgomery College.
Or Kettering.
And after you're done, come see us. Right?
How do you decide what's going to be best for you, given these warnings, these concerns, some places that are specializing? How do you evaluate the vast array of opportunities that are out there, given what we know?
Well, the data is not great. Let's start with that. You don't have too many institutions outside of the coding boot camps who are advertising, 98% placement rate into $70,000 a year starting salary jobs. But ultimately, I think that is where we're heading. This combination of the crisis of affordability and employability has caused what we call an employment imperative, where 90%+ of students consistently now today say that they are enrolling in a post-secondary institution for the purpose of getting a job and a good first job in particular. So that data needs to be there. Institutions need to take responsibility for helping their students, not only preparing them, but actually helping them into the workforce and getting them good first jobs.
Dr. McMahon, aside from enrolling at Kettering?
Aside from the rolling carry, I think the whole, how I would kind of conclude is this whole, we have to really take a very strong look at this whole notion of skills development as a thing distinct from education, in a sense, because when you talk to them, not just employers, but in graduate schools and professional schools, and you ask them what they're actually looking for in graduates, they can actually articulate this very clearly. They're looking for a set of attributes. They're not as particular about domain knowledge, because they recognize that three-quarters of the stuff, the material, the facts, if you will, that a student learns while they're in school will be obsolete within a year of their graduation. And so they're more likely to say, well, we can teach them what they know when they come to us. What we need is a student who believes, who knows, that no matter what they are faced with, they can figure it out, and they've been given the tools and the skills to do it. Students that are resilient, students that know how to operate in organizations, who do not believe, who understand that it's not just about the acquisition of knowledge, but it's also about the application of knowledge and how you work within groups in order to advance ideas and advance the human condition. Those are the skills that traditional higher education tends to say, well, those are these other things. We're going to focus on the knowledge acquisition, and we'll let that happen at some other indeterminate point. I think that is an artificial distinction, and as the relationship of the consumer to higher education evolves, and it is evolving, the demand is going to be ever more directed at that integration of those skills into the education of the students.
Right. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. I want to thank Dr. Rye, Dr. McMahon, and Mr. Craig for joining us for this very great panel. But I'd like to next hand off to my colleague, Nick Anderson, who will be hosting the final panel.
Thanks for listening. To hear more interviews from this series and other Washington Post Live programs, visit us at WashingtonPostLive.com.